That's such a great tune. Kenny Wheeler on Mo. It's like a 14-bar form.
Yeah, it's just a simple little thing. There's a counter line, which, you know, is played usually with another horn. It's when he does it, it's a lot slower. And it's on a record with no drummer called Angel Song, which is a beautiful, beautiful record with Bill Frisell and Dave Holland and Lee Konitz, another one of my all-time favorite musicians. I've sort of taken it and, you know, increased the tempo a little bit. I find it fun to play a little faster. So I kind of take it a little brighter than it is on that record. It's much more serene and, you know, kind of sitting in those chords a little bit more, which you get a better sense of when you don't play a trio. But also I do like to play a trio. It's fun to play trio. And I love playing trio with John too, because he's so adept at like spelling things out or expanding on a chord while you're playing. So you can actually hear those chords as they go by, even though you're just really hearing two voices, you know?
Yeah. John covers a lot of ground. He's just not playing your standard quarter notes, bass notes.
No, he's breaking the time up. And he actually was referencing the counter line as we were stating the melody that on the way out, which I thought was very cool.
I was trying, but yeah.
So, which means you've played this song quite a few times then, John.
I have played this song, and I've heard it. I know the record you're referring to. It's a beautiful record. There's a lot happening in with very little information. You don't need a lot to make a lot of music. Sometimes the less information you have on the page, the more music you can create. Don't edit that out.
Well, with a bass player like you, John, I mean, yeah, that is true. You know, you have so much to bring to the music, and you're so open. I feel like whenever we play, anything can happen. I mean, we can swing, we can play free, we can do everything in between. And no matter what, you're going to be there. The time is going to feel great. All the harmony is going to be covered. And then here in this song, you're also covering some of the melodic counterline as you're playing the bass.
Wow, there's such a strong saxophone trio tradition, talking bass, sax, drums. So, I mean, I really enjoy chordless, is that the right word? You know, without someone comping or playing chords. I really enjoy that freedom, if you will. Because, yeah, we're playing over a set of chords or harmonic structure, but then we each, you know, for me, it's always about, yeah, you know, you're a bass player. Okay, that's my role, number one. But there's also an equal percentage that you need to be responsible for time, harmony, melody, rhythm, all of that, not just playing roots and chord changes, but knowing how the tune is actually functioning and how you can relate to that on the bass. So I'm supplying a functional role at the same time, though, thinking, okay, since there are no chords here, what can I play that would imply the harmony or not imply the harmony, but play off what maybe, for in this case, Andrew's doing or what you're doing, Keith, that influences my decision. Whereas maybe, you know, if I don't necessarily have to stick to the actual harmony that's being played, I can feed off what Andrew's playing or introduce something else completely unrelated, but maybe that sparks a new idea.
It certainly does in me. I mean, it certainly does. Like, there was three or four moments when I was playing where I stopped playing and John played something and I immediately was like, oh yeah, I'm grabbing that. And I didn't repeat it verbatim or, you know, I just didn't ape it, but I took that idea and tried to integrate it into the next phrase and I do that all the time when I'm playing with John. You know, I'm constantly getting things from what he's, you know, supplying. Again, apart from just the functional aspect and supplying, you know, there's also a lot of inspiration that comes from that part of the group too.
Yeah, you've got incredible ears, Andrew, and I hear you doing that even with, I'll play something and then I hear you take the rhythm And I think, wow, he was really listening.
Yeah.
He really heard that. You know?
That's another New York thing. I mean, I don't know if John agrees with this or not, but I used to think like, oh, the musicians are the same everywhere. And I think that, like, especially nowadays, technically they are, but not listening. Like, there's something about, again, just playing all these sessions, you just learn the art of listening. And that's something, it's a very subtle part of the music, but to me, it's maybe the most important part. And I guess the other, you sort of touched on this earlier, and I think John kind of feels the same way, is like that openness to not, you know, a certain, just certain one way of playing. Like there's 15 ways you could play. And, you know, that runs the gamut from playing like completely improvised free music to try and play like straight down the pike standard and then everything in between. And those are the musicians that I love the most, the people who I feel like they're kind of inhabiting the middle. You know, they're not at some kind of extreme of like, they're just like, you know, Pet Shop on Fire avant-garde musicians, or they're just not like, you know, really traditional jazz musicians. They're like, I call them like improvising musicians. They're somewhere in the middle, you know. So that, and that's really important to me as an improviser. Those are the types of folks that I try and surround myself with. For me, it's a shame, but I feel like they get the least amount of attention. It's like anything, the people at the extremes are going to get the lion's share of the attention. And then people kind of doing something which isn't as easily categorized sort of get the short shift, you know?
Yeah. I know Billy Hart describes the those kind of musicians or that kind of music as multi-directional.
Yeah. You know? I've heard that. Yeah.
And that's how I think of Billy. He can do all of that.
Yeah, he does it all.
You know,
and very well and very creatively. And you know, the more abstract his music gets, it's really informed by being able to play really concrete music. And I feel like that's the same. You know, when we play more open, it's really informed by the lessons we've learned from learning how to play, you know, in a traditional or more concrete sense.
Yeah, he's going to play with Shirley Horn and then go play with Juan Dishi.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's two
yeah.
opposite ends of the spectrum right there.
Totally.
And he can make it happen, make them both and swing.
Make them both sound amazing, yeah.
One thing I was going to, you were talking about Kenny Wheeler, this tune. I mean, I find about Kenny's tunes that is fun for me, and not, maybe Andrew, Keith, you may have comments on this, but just his harmonic, the way he writes and hears harmony, it's really easy and clear for me to, you know, find common tones through like multiple bars. Like I'm saying one note that you can play that works through maybe eight chord changes. And that's how he writes. So it's really for a bass when you're talking about playing without chords, that's something that I kind of immediately hear and latch onto, that you could play one note through eight bars of the tune and it works without actually having to outline the chord changes, but because that one note functions differently for each chord, but it fits into the chord, if that makes any sense.
Totally, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So for bass, you know, I can pedal out on one note and let that sustain through eight bars, fourteen bars, and it kind of works. You know, it's maybe listening to these Bach chorales, it's a similar thing.
Yeah.
It's very chorale, like very sing vocal music. It makes a lot of sense, the harmony and how it moves.
Totally.
Got passing tones and common tones throughout the chord. This may be a bit more theoretical than our listening audience needs to hear, but it's something that, you know, I find really unique to Kenny's music, and which makes it a lot of fun to play.
Well, we've talked about some of our mentors today already. You've talked about Kenny Wheeler. We mentioned Billy Hart, of course, who most of the folks in the listening audience are aware of, that Billy spent quite a bit of time here at Western. And you have had a close association, Andrew, with the great saxophonist George Garzon in Boston. Tell us about your time with George.
So I studied with George for 2 years when I went to New England Conservatory to do my master's. I had spent a summer in Boston taking lessons with another great saxophone player, Jerry Braganzi, and I spent as many Monday nights as I could at a club called The Willow, which was in Somerville, a jazz club in Somerville, which George's group called The Fringe, which was made up of himself, John Lockwood on bass, and Bob Galati, who unfortunately just passed away about 2 weeks ago. They played every Monday night. And it was just a free trio. And I'd never really been exposed to that kind of music, but everyone, my previous teacher in Toronto told me about George, when he heard I was going to study with Jerry, he's like, well, you got to go check this George Garzon guy out. And he actually gave me a tape, a cassette tape, which was making the rounds of the Toronto jazz community. And it was called, on the title was called, it was called Cigar. And it was called Cigar because at about the 20-minute mark of the cassette tape, there's just this ferocious, you know, kind of like jungle-ish kind of groove that are being played by Galati and Lockwood. And George starts playing, and it's just ferocious what he's playing. But then he very abruptly stops, and you hear, you know, some clattering and things moving around. And then you hear the sound of the microphone coming out of the stand, and he starts screaming into the microphone about somebody who is smoking a cigar in the club. And it's bothering him, obviously, because every time he takes a breath, he's taking huge breaths because he's just blowing his brains out. But he's smelling this really acrid, you know, probably not a very expensive cigar. So he just eviscerates whoever this is. Then you hear the microphone being put back in, and he just goes absolutely ballistic. And I listened to that tape, you know, 100 times. I'd never heard the saxophone really being played like that. You know, certainly it's like a post Coltrane type situation, but it's even more amped up than that. So Pat told me about him and gave me this tape, and so I knew I had to go check this out. So I just started to go hear him play, and I just loved his playing and his sound and his time feel, and I just knew, like, I gotta be around this guy more. So that's why I went to NEC, just so I could take lessons with him. And, you know, it's like a lot of, you know, student-teacher relationships. Like, it just continued after I stopped studying with him. And he was the one who got my wife Helen and I our first apartment in New York. I was like, George, I want to move to New York. He's like, great, I got your apartment all set up. I'll call you in an hour, you know? And he's like, it's all set, you know? And so he really was extremely helpful. And, you know, we subsequently did a record for Steeplechase together, and, you know, did a tour of the Canadian Jazz Festivals together and some other little tours around New England with this trio, you know, this cordless trio that I had at the time. And, you know, we've just been pretty close ever since, and, you know, talk and interact frequently. And I bounce ideas off him, and he bounces jokes off me and tells me stories, gambling stories. You know, I've always said that him and his life would make a great reality show. You know, it's really, there's a lot of humor in it all the time. So we're going to play one of George's pieces. So this is a blues. This is an old blues that he wrote called Hey, Open Up. Thank you.
Well, this has been really fun, guys, to have you both on the show. Many times when I do this show, it's just a single performer maybe, or a vocalist with an accompanist, but it's been great to have both of you with your long time association in New York, and then now living here together. Have you both in the house here has been really a lot of fun. John Hebert, we're so delighted that you're in Kalamazoo teaching at Western and bringing lots of new young bass players this way with you, and just bringing your artistry and your beautiful Southern vibe. You know, being from New Orleans, you have a certain vibe that
thank you, Keith,
that I love, and all the years of experience that you have on the road. I mean, people may not know you've been in Fred Hirsch's band for 15 years, maybe
almost maybe 12,
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's been
you've been everywhere with Fred Hirsch, and you're playing frequently at the Village Vanguard, and you've played with so many other great players and have some records under your own name as well. And for our listening audience, if you'd like to check out more John Hebert, you can go to his website. And Hebert is spelled H-E-B-E-R-T.
You dig.
John Hebert, with the H, silent H. JohnHebert.com. And then, of course, our saxophonist, our professor of saxophone, originally from Toronto and then New York for forever, and he's been here for 7 years, and he's brought so much new energy to our community and to our program, and I couldn't be happier. If you'd like to check out more of Andrew Rathbun, again, it's very simple, andrewrathbun.com online, and of course, these guys are on social media, and this has just been a ball. Thank you guys for being
here.
Yeah,
Keith. Beautiful, man.
Thanks for having us, Keith. It was a lot of fun.
And let's close with some more music. What would you like to do, Andrew?
Why don't we play a tune by Thelonious Monk, another favorite of mine. This is called Boo Boo's Birthday. Uh-huh.